Welcome to The Father's Heart with Tom Clark, better known as Papa Tom.
Good morning. This is Papa Tom at The Father's Heart Talk Show. And our special guest today is Coach Joe Wooten. Our family's got associated with ourselves with Joe's father, Morgan Wooten, who's one of the most famous basketball coaches in history, actually. He was admitted to the Basketball Hall of Fame, and he never coached beyond high school. We're going to talk about that in a minute and what the reasons are behind that, because he certainly could have went to college and the pros. My oldest son, Zach, was recruited by Morgan, and actually Joe at the time, because I think Joe was the assistant coach when my son was going. This is going back 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago now. And there's certain things about Joe's dad, Morgan Wooten, who I believe was originally from North Carolina. Is that correct, Joe?
Born in Durham.
Born in Durham. How do you like that? And there's a lot of correlations to this, but you know, the mission statement of the Father's Heart Talk Show is bringing the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest they smite the land with a curse. And I really discovered about a year ago that the curse was fatherlessness. And that's the biggest social ill that I see happening in America today, is fatherlessness in all the different sections of society and our culture. And Morgan Wooten, as a coach, was a father. And we're going to go into the stories that relate to that. With that in mind, I'd like to just turn it over for a moment to our audience, Joe, and share with our audience a little bit about you and your background and about honoring your dad. I think it was his anniversary last week, wasn't it?
About 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was the anniversary of his passing, and he was an April birthday. So, you know, he was born in 31 in Durham, North Carolina. And it's good to be with you, Papa Tom. I obviously know you as Tom Clark, but obviously great to hear your name, because I think that obviously speaks to the influence and the emphasis of the show. My name is Joe Wooten. I've been the basketball coach at O'Connell High School. This is going to shock you, Tom, for 25 years.
Wow.
Just for my 25th year. And it's been an honor every year I've coached. I started coaching when I was 19 as an assistant for my father at DeMatha. I coached there for two years, then went to Furman University as an assistant college coach back in the day called Restricted Earnings. And then came back to DeMatha for 4 years before taking the job at O'Connell 25 years ago. And, you know, my father obviously was a Hall of Fame coach. And I think he was a Hall of Fame person. You know, just so many great stories about him. He started coaching an orphanage, and his first team was 0-16 in baseball. Mm-hmm. And he won 1,300 games in basketball over a 46-year career. So from rags to riches, from no wins to great success. And I think he was a class guy every stop in between. I think that really influenced his success.
That was the name of his book, wasn't it?
Orphans the Champions. Actually, my sister Kathy came up with the name of his first book. He wrote 6 books. You know, he started at an orphanage. In fact, one of the players on his first team was Uncle Angelo Doss, was like a little brother to him. He was young when he started, and you know, just lifelong friends from the great games that he coached.
It just reminded me of something. You know, one time I called your dad, and he says, "Who's on the phone?" I said, "Tom Clark." He says, "You don't sound like Tom Clark." He says, "You don't sound like the Tom Clark I know." And I said, "Zach Clark's dad." "Oh," he says, "that Tom Clark." He says, "My best friend from North Carolina was named Tom Clark. Did you know that?"
Yeah. He's actually he was my godfather, and he grew up with him. He was originally from down there, but then they both grew up in Maryland in Silver Spring. Lifelong friends, a guy named Jack McShay, Dooney Waldron, Tom Clark, and were his great friends and lifelong friends. And he was my godfather, so you know, he had great relationships and great influences.
Yeah, well, I want to start our talk off with mentioning that there was a specific time when my son Zach was a senior and your dad had a party for the team, you know, at the end of the senior year. And he had the parents over there with the children and back in your dad's home in Maryland. And down in the basement of that home, you had trophies all over the place. I mean, it has to have hundreds of trophies because your dad was a very winning coach, obviously. And in the centerpiece, down in the basement, I looked at this picture, this little yellowed 8x10 picture, and it was a picture of your dad, and it said Morgan's first basketball team. And it was the picture of the orphanage and this ragtag group of kids, right? And I thought to myself, man, this guy was a father. It was like in his heart to take care of the orphans. I mean, it's like scripture tells us that God is the father to the fatherless, right? And here he was, a father to the fatherless, the orphans. Of all places you could have started your career, who would have thought you'd started at an orphanage, right?
Tom, the amazing thing about it was, as I mentioned, Angelo Marini was in that first picture and was a lifelong friend of his. But the way he got the job, as the name you referenced already, was Tom Clark. Tom Clark was a star baseball player at St. John's in D.C. and played for Joe Gallagher, who got my dad started in high school coaching. And basically, my dad, his dad worked, his uncle worked, Jack Early worked with the Police Boys and Girls Club. They needed a coach at the St. Joseph's Home for Orphans. And he said, what about Tom Clark? They were 19. So he took Tom Clark there. And Tom quickly realized that he didn't want the job. So he started selling my dad. My dad said, before he knew it, sister didn't offer him the job. She said, okay, Morgan, it looks like you're the right candidate. You start Monday at 3 o'clock. He said, I never accepted it. Batilda. And he said, you didn't say no to a nun back then. Right. And the rest was history. Started 0-16 on his baseball team. And a story he tells in his book, he says that he, after one of the 32-0 losses to St. Anthony's, they came back and sister had all soda pop out for him. And she said, coach, I trust that you won. And the kids were drinking the soda pop. And he said, no, sister, we lost. Didn't tell her the score. And she made him put all the soda pop away. So that was the way things were back then. But they said, Morgan, come back in the fall. We're better at football. And they went undefeated in football. So the exact opposite of baseball. And then basketball, they played outside on outdoor courts. And, you know, talk about father to a father, to fatherless. A guy named Johnny Ryle bought the baskets and said, you know, I'll help the kids. They didn't even have baskets. They just had blacktop. And, you know, the story, you know, that probably rings the most true about impact on kids is the Rocky Marciano story. Rocky Marciano was obviously the heavyweight champion of the world, a legend, and they got him to come speak to the underprivileged kids at St. Joe's Home. And one of the kids raised his hand and said, you know, to Rocky Marciano under questions after the talk, said, you know, champ, do you think you could beat Morgan? And my dad had boxed at Maryland, but very, very amateur boxer. Sure. He would tell a joke. Now he'd say, you know, I used to attract a huge crowd for my fights. Probably that was his sense of humor. But and he said, do you think you could beat Morgan? And he said, you know, Rocky Marciano handled like a pro. You know, I'm a little bigger than him. He was a lot bigger. Uh-huh. And he said, but I think it'd be a great fight. And, the kid said, I think he'd kill you. And my dad said, at that point, he knew, I'm making an impact on these kids. And he was a lifelong coach.
You know, when I was growing up, Joe, I never really had that much of a desire to be a teacher or a coach, my own way of thinking of things. I was raised in an Irish Catholic family up in Long Island, and my desire was to go into business and make a lot of money. I always had this respect in my mind for people who made a lot of money, doctors, lawyers, professionally speaking, or businessmen who made a lot of money. I never really had that much respect a desire to become a teacher or coach. As I've gotten older, I realized that it was right backwards. It's like, I don't really have much respect to doctors anymore, not having gone through what we've gone through the last couple of years. We'll go into that. But my point was that teachers and coaches who are teachers, particularly ones that have a father's heart, that want to really take care of the kids and really can relate to the kids, these people should be at the highest level of our society in terms of what we should respect. It shouldn't be how much money they make. And now that I've got 6 children and I've got 15 grandchildren, I look at teachers and coaches and I'm saying, wow, that my value system was upside down. And now I completely see it from a completely different perspective.
Well, you know, one of the things that I know we always reference when we train a lot of coaches at our camp and let them know what Abraham Lincoln said, the great president of the United States, saved the Union and the horrible institution of slavery and really set America on a much better course. And he said, if you truly want to test a person's character, give them power. And most people can handle adversity, But as a coach, you have power. You have power over the kids on your team. You have a chance to make their life miserable or joyous. Mm-hmm. You can be a tool of torture, an instrument of inspiration. And so I think it's really important. It's really important that, that you know, we understand that as coaches, that we have a tremendous opportunity to touch people's lives. And my dad always understood that and use that power for good. And I think, you know, one thing about coaching is it's when they're the most pliable. You get them at their highs and you get them at their lows. And so for that opportunity, you need to use that influence for good.
Yeah. You know, it was told to me, and I realized it multiple times, that your dad had been offered these multi-million dollar contracts. This is going back 25 years ago with college coaches, top coaching positions in college, even probably the pros. And every single time he turned it down because he felt that his calling and destiny was to be at the high school level, because he had the most impact and the most influence on teenagers. That 14 to 18 year old time frame was the time he got the most impact. So he never left that. Now he had his basketball things in the summer, the camps. I'm sure he did quite successfully at doing that in the camps, but it was still consistent with what his calling and destiny was. And not only what did he end up teaching the kids and having it back on them, he had an impact on coaches across the world.
He really did. He spoke on five continents. And, you know, one of the things we did some math that we've had over 240,000 campers come through camp since 1961. It's the oldest basketball camp in the country. Mm-hmm. And people told him and Joe Gallagher, who I'm the namesake of, that's why my name's Joe. They said to him, you know, kids won't play basketball in the summer. So amazingly, you know, they were proven wrong. But the reason I reference the 240,000 kids is the impact that all those coaches had. And I think it was an opportunity to touch people's lives in a positive way. Sure. And give a message well outside his teams. And so I think, you know, you say pay it forward. People can really pay it forward by giving back to those. I know my dad would often say, people never forget a coach. They will know whether you cared about him. And he often said he remembers a guy named Tony Cream, I believe, was his eighth grade coach. He said, I don't know if he was a very good coach, but I knew he was a good man. And he influenced me in a positive way, gave me a love of the game, gave me enthusiasm for the game, helped me feel positive about myself. So that's really what a coach does. It's not teaching the sport. It's using the sport to teach life skills.
That's exactly right. We're going to have to close here in a minute. And we'll get back to talking about some more of the stories that I want to bring out, because along these lines of how important it is for a coach to impact a child's life or a young man's life, particularly you went to a boys' school, all boys' school, the math, I think O'Connell's boys and girls, but coaches in basketball, he was a men's boys' basketball coach, had an effect on their lives and bringing them to be fathers. We'll be back in a moment with Coach Joey Wood. We're back with the Father's Heart Talk Show, talking with Coach Joey Wooten. And we want to bring out the aspect of how a coach can impact a child's life at a very early age or a teenage age. And the first thing that came to my mind about how Coach Morgan Wooten went beyond just teaching basketball was that every day at practice, he would bring up a word of wisdom for his players. One thing I remember, and Joe's going to fill in a lot of these stories, my son Zach came back and said, Dad, Coach talked to us about enthusiasm today. What'd he say? He said, no good thing was ever created without enthusiasm. And I looked it up, and it said, in the Noah Webster's Dictionary of Enthusiasm, it says, getting excited. Word enthusiasm means getting excited about what God has revealed to you. That's when there's the actual original meaning of the word. So tell us a little bit of stories about Joe, about your dad and how he taught his players beyond the skills of basketball, life skills.
So he always had a thought of the day and like a great one is nothing great is accomplished without enthusiasm. And, you know, obviously you show me anybody that's good at anything, they're excited about it. They're fired up about it. And, you know, going back to, you know, one of his kind of goes back to the first segment, he would always say, don't chase money, chase success. If you're successful, money will find you. So, do the right thing. He always, another great one he would have is all sinners have all saints have a past and all sinners have a future. So then he would take that opportunity to talk to them and say, you know, what does that mean? What does that mean to you? And he would often be amazed that he'd come home and at dinner, he'd say, you know, this kid had an insight that I never thought of, that I never would have thought of. So that was amazing. Another one of his favorite ones was, it wasn't raining when Noah built the ark. And so obviously, you know, what do you think? Zach might say, it means you got to be prepared. It means you have to plan ahead. It means you have to be a team player. You have to have faith. I mean, all the different things you could do. So there's always a great discussion point for his teams. And he would start with the thought of the day, but then end after practice and discuss the thought of the day.
Yeah. So I remember one of the things that I think you mentioned was also, a tamed horse never won a race.
So Dad liked to, he liked to go to the track and you know, bet a few times on the ponies. In fact, my dad was a character. He took me to the track when I was, Uncle Angelo took me to my first track race, and I said, Uncle Angelo, he said, we're going to win the trifecta. And I said, what does that mean? He says, it means we have a big party. So Angelo was a character, but he did that. But he would use always life examples, and he would always say, to your point, you know, he would say, you know, he would always use stories to teach. And he would always say, you know, the greatest teacher of all time was Jesus. And he always taught in parables. Right. So that was one of his favorite sayings. But, you know, he would use an opportunity to teach through his stories. And so the tame horse never went away. He said, watch the Kentucky Derby. You know, he said, the really thoroughbred racehorses won't get in the starting gate. They buck and they have to get them in. And he said, you know, the tame horse is not going to win you the race. So the gray ones sometimes get a little, you know, ruffled and riled up. And he would often say, anyone can coach the All-American kid. Anyone can coach the perfect kid, but the true coach can coach almost anyone and make a difference with anyone. So I think, you know, we can't live in a world of idealism as well. You know, kids maybe have some weaknesses. Kids have things they need to work on.
Sure.
And we work with them as fathers, as mentors, as leaders to help develop those skills.
There's a man who wrote a book, I think his name is John Eldridge, I think he's a pastor out in Colorado. And they were involved with horses, by the way, out in Colorado on a ranch. And he wrote a book called Wild at Heart. And it's an interesting story about how young men, you know, we always in our society want to emasculate men and calm them down. And really, God made them wild in many ways. And that we should understand that they're made wild and go with that, as opposed to trying to take that away from them.
Yeah, and I think, Tom, to that point, you know, I know if my father was sitting here, he would often say, you know, one of the statements was, the greatest thing a father can do for his children is love their mother. Mm-hmm. But he meant that in that, you know, each has a role, and a mother's role is incredibly important, but so is a father's. Mm-hmm. And I think kids need both, and they need to be able to react to both male and female figures. And so I think it's a blessing that, you know, you have that father figure. It's a blessing you have the mother figure. And they bring out the best in both of us and hold high standards for both of us. So I think it's really that balance. And what he would say is it was teamwork. You know, and he had little sayings. He always brought things into the household. He would say, if you bumped into him in the hallway, he would say, offensive foul. And if somebody's like fumbled something, he'd say, loose ball in the infield. So, you know, he always had his sports references, but, you know, he definitely, he believed that, you know, enthusiasm, he said, out of control enthusiasm, not good, but, you know, fired up, excited, passionate. That's what God made us to be.
There was a story about your dad created the, what was the offensive foul? It was the charge.
Right? Yeah.
Is that a true story?
True story. Johnny Herbert and John Austin, when they started taking charge. So Dr. Knightsey, I believe it was, or Nitsey, was the rules, the head rules for the, from the Hall of Fame. And they actually, initially it was not called a charge. It was called a push. And you actually shot fouls. There was no offensive foul. And they changed the rule, I think, 12 times. But they came to DeMatha, and he was the one that started taking charges. Johnny Herbert was his first scholarship player, and it made a big difference.
What year was that? That'd be like
1958, I think, 59.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be way, way, way back.
Yeah.
It's amazing how most people, I find history very interesting. And where it all started. The offensive foul was started by this high school basketball coach. Well, we wouldn't even realize that would be the case. But life is stranger than it seems like when you know the history about things.
And to reference that point too, is like, I always thought was amazing is, you know, DeMatha now has built a nice new gym, but he coached in a bandbox the whole year. I think it was six rows of bleachers on each side.
Yeah.
Sat 400 people. And I played in front of a sold out gym every time I played in high school, and it was only 400 people, but you know, it was, and he definitely thought, saw it as a home court advantage, but it just shows you facilities. You know, I know Colin Powell, one of our great leaders of our time, says, you know, schedules don't matter much. It's lessons in leadership. You know, theories of management don't much matter. It's only by attracting the best people will you accomplish great deeds. And obviously fathers have to be the best people for the future of our country.
Yeah, I must suppose we don't realize this, but I read a statistic once that said 85% of a child's view of themselves comes from their the words that their father speaks. So a child's identity comes from the words that a father speaks over that child, boy or girl, doesn't matter, not gender specific. And that the child's identity growing up doesn't come from the mother so much, it comes from the father.
And that's amazing.
It's amazing it's wired that way. And that's why when you have these single moms, I've never talked to a single mom, or I should say it the other way. Every time I've talked to a single mom, and I ask her, what is the greatest regret you have as a single mom? She says that my child does not have a father. It's
absolutely, and it's heroic that so a parent does it by themselves. I think that's, you know, they have to play dual roles, but obviously, and I, you know, I'll say this to reference my father, you know, his two of his biggest influences were my Uncle Robert, who was a rear admiral in the Navy, and his Uncle Jack, and they were huge influences on him and were father-like figures. They played a role in his life as well.
Yeah. We often get confused over fathers having to be biological. They don't. They're just, as you mentioned, father-like figures. You know, I've been discussing a lot of the reading I've done and a lot of things study I've done, that the characteristics of a father is someone who wants to protect, someone who wants to provide, and someone wants to mentor or teach life skills to the next generation.
Great, 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 great definition.
Yeah. And so anybody could have that. I think the influence that we have over society and the people we come in contact with, if we understand that, we can certainly influence their lives in a great direction. Now, you're a father right now and a coach, so all the things that you've learned in your life, you can now start applying to young men's lives that you coach at O'Connell and have an influence on them. And it keeps seeding through that.
Yeah. And it's an honor. And you know, it's always great to have conversations like this. We always have something at the overnight camp called the Coaches Roundtable. The coaches of workforce, there's a voluntary time at lunch for an hour and 10 minutes. We talk philosophy, X's and O's, hiring process, mentorship. And it's always a great reminder, you know, what you just said is, it reminds you every day is it's such a privilege. It's such an honor. And we have to remind ourselves every day, we get busy, we get, you know, we're on our devices, we're getting tasks done, which is good examples for our kids, but also take the time, I know, you know, to say you're proud of them, to say, hey, I think you can do better here, to say, I believe in you. But you need to do this in order to make your goals happen. So I think to remind ourselves of that is always really important because we get busy with life. And, yeah. You know, I know we always like to say the athlete or the son or the daughter is not an interruption of our work, but the purpose of our work.
Sure. You know, words change worlds. And we start to realize the power of the tongue. You know, it's the most powerful member of our body is the tongue, is the words that we speak. And as fathers, particularly, we have a responsibility to speak good words, encouraging words, positive words, building up a person's sense of themselves, their identity, as opposed to tearing down. And that the words have that kind of impact, and we can have that influence on people's lives every day of our lives, the words we speak, the words we say to our wives, the words we say to our children, our friends, our players in your particular case. And these things we're not really conscious of oftentimes. We just react out of our own emotions without being consciously aware of the rippling effect that has on the people that we're speaking to. And if we think of it from a concept of a father, one of the best things we can do as a human being, particularly as a male, I would say this, is to become a father. because when God first spoke to people, created them, he says, be fruitful and multiply. I see that not just in the biological sense of being fruitful and multiply, but I think as a sense of being fruitful and multiply people along the lines of who they were created to be and having them multiply in that sense.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was very fortunate, you know, the McDonald's game is coming up and I was fortunate to take over the chairmanship of the game, selection committee in the game for my father and work with my wife, Terry Lynn, who does a phenomenal job as the director. But from the time I was six till the time I was 35, I would go to the McDonald's game and have dinner two nights before the game with my dad's coaching buddy.
Can you hold that thought for 1 second?
Sure.
We'll be right back in a minute. McDonald's thing.